Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio. We're excited to welcome award-winning photographer G.B. Smith to talk about his book, Pathways. This is a beautiful, beautiful book of images. They're award-winning images, and obviously from his catalog, and really shows architecture and nature and how they unite and going through it. And they're all black and white. We're going to talk about that, why he works in black and white photography. But there's something really cool about this book. I'm a person who always loves rounded architecture, things to be round. I don't know. If I could live in a hut, I would. But this book really showed me that there can be flow and roundness in straight lines. It's kind of weird. So check it out. Go to gbsmith.com. That's his website. The book comes out on November 7th, 2023. So welcome to the show, GB. How are you?
Thank you, Lisa. I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So what is this about this roundness? And then now you've got, like, you make me look at things a little differently in that the straight lines can create a flow and a roundness, even though they're straight lines and have those kind of patterns.
Well, a lot of it is around, if you strip away the distractions of particularly color, you know, to your point around, you know, black and white, you actually get to see the shapes of things and patterns that you wouldn't normally pay attention to. Because, you know, very often we're all distracted by, you know, bright, shiny things. And there's wonderful, beautiful colors in the world that don't get me wrong. But if you strip those away and try and focus on where the actual structures are, you really see a different kind of, you appreciate the shape of things and the you know, the actual structure of, and be them buildings or natural things like caves, like the one I'm in.
Yeah, you're in a cave. He's got his own man cave. That's it. Well, one of the things I love, I know it's called Pathways for a reason too, is the docks that you have in the book, and you've got bridges and things like that. In fact, we were going to do a story on that with all the parks we've been to of boardwalks and bridges. It's like, do you dare set foot on them? And I don't think I want to set foot on majority of those jetties or docks that you have in the book, because some of them are broken down. They're like, they're getting old, and you think, wow, I wonder who built this and what, how many, you know, there's stories behind it. You know, when you see those kind of those.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating to me. And I think, you know, I'm kind of drawn to that. What would you call it? Sort of, you know, marine dereliction, or, you know, a different age. Because, you know, I grew up in England in the industrial, you know, where the first industrial revolution went on. And so I grew up around coal mines and steelworks and a lot of sort of very industrial architectures. And I, you know, I now live in, you know, close to Baltimore and the harbor on the east, all along the, you know, the main of the East Coast. And I'm fascinated by these structures that still remain, you know, these forgotten piers that are sort of falling into dereliction. And you know, to me, it's a nostalgic thing around, you know, the industries that used to, the marine industry particularly, that used to be there. But they're gorgeous shapes and forms, and they seem to just reach out largely into the ocean.
And they do become part of nature. You know, where we are right now, we're in the Appalachian region, and I go walk through the forest with a dog, and I'm seeing old barns out here that are falling, yeah. You know, and barns, like, I'm like, that may be a whole new thing I'm into now. But there's a thing with them, because you wonder about who built the barns, the family story of the farm, and why are they derelict now? And, but you see these old signs of pathways where people used to go, and some lead up to cemeteries where we are. And, it's just signs that used to be there. And you're looking at this, and nature has reclaimed it and kind of like coddled it and put moss on them. And like, there's all kinds of things living on them. And I know when they are underwater, things grow on things too.
And I think it's a confluence of things that are super interesting to it. If people put a lot of time and effort, you imagine the effort that went into the building of these various pathways. and now they're not used, and nature, as you say, reclaims them in its own way. But they're things of great beauty. They really are. And I love the patterns on them and the simplicity of their design as well. But pathways to me means a multitude of different dimensions to it.
So architecture, did you always have an interest in it?
I was always fascinated by modern architecture because I love the clean lines on it, and I guess I'm attracted to more minimalist type things generally. And of course, most of modern architecture, not all, is generally minimalist in type of form, or if not its form, then the usage of materials. And I love simplicity and cleanness and bringing things down to their essence. And I think that a lot of modern architecture is that, and that's why I enjoy it so much. Yes, I'm very drawn to it.
Yeah, you really did make me look at it differently. That it can have those curves and those lines can twirl around if you just look at the flow in the modern style of things. But then you look at, even docks, there has to be precision in docks and boardwalks and piers and bridges. There's this precision, but there's a beauty to it. And it's like, I mean, I look at the bridges to us are always interesting because there's like, do you trust going over it? How do you feel after you photograph so many from the top, the bottom, and all sides? I mean, how do you feel about bridge work?
Proceed with care. Yes, proceed with care, I would say on some of them. But I think the point around all bridges, all of those things, is they have their lines. They have the if you look at a bridge, for example, what I see when I look at the bridge is that is the clean lines to it, and there's a pathway through the image that you're looking at. And I think particularly if you can shut out the other things that are going on, and you've got the environment, sky, and all of those things too. And if you just look at it, I think you really get a greater appreciation for what's around us. And it is taking the time to focus on it and to try and strip those other things out is, I think, super, super rewarding. And listen, for me, it's a non-choice because I grew up extremely colorblind. And I didn't really fully appreciate how colorblind until I really started. A, you get tested, and I remember as a kid, the nurse who tested me said, "You're the most colorblind person I've ever come across." And that was further
And
reinforced
you're
another
all
day.
yay.
Yeah, so okay, all right. And so, I've kind of always grown up not being distracted by a lot of colors.
So are you seeing a lot of shade? Like this.
I see a lot of shades. I mean, I see some colors, but not as other people do. But I am extremely colorblind. And the irony of that is when I first went into photography and started my apprenticeship in it, I was a color printer in a dark room. And we discovered very quickly just how colorblind I was, Lisa. I got moved on from that particular assignment very quickly.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, we used to, our magazine was, and I mean, we come from print backgrounds, especially Nancy's side, and she's, that's what she did and ended up also printing her own film for the magazine. And I remember having to get all these different colored film things and stitching them together. No, that was not an easy task, I'm just going to say, but going into photography too, from what I've read that you've actually done a lot of the actual the dark room side of things too, which there's a mod. She had a dark room as well, and there's a modification of color that happens in a dark room with the chemicals and things. So, were you doing it all strictly black and white? So, if you'd taken something, were you? I mean, there's no real color you're messing around with in the chemicals and all that.
Yeah, no, I grew up with large plate cameras, so I grew up with a very technical, traditional, photographic apprenticeship back in the time. And I
Nice.
have to say, it was Lisa, in full admission, it was 4 decades ago. So you can imagine what the technology was then. It was plate cameras, and I was an industrial photographer, so large plate cameras of building largely. So very sort of technically based training, and that obviously stayed with me. And you know, there's a couple of points that I would make about it. One, it's a very slow process. So you know, I still use what I describe as those same techniques now, except with modern technology and cameras. But I use everything manually, nothing automatic. I take very long time exposures. Everything's on a tripod. Everything is done in a very slow mode
And get the lighting right. That's the
to get the
key.
lighting right. And I'll go back to the same place multiple times if I can't get what I want. So, you know, it's a lot of time and effort goes once I see something that I really want to try and capture. You know, a lot of time and effort goes into that, but it's using very old traditional techniques of
But you're
long
doing it
exposure.
digitally now, but digital
Yeah.
now.
Yeah,
So are
they're
you shooting in color then? And then processing it black and white or filtering it black and white.
yeah. I mean, you know, it's
Oh,
digital
wow.
cameras. I use large format, modern, state-of-the-art
Yeah.
digital cameras, but I use them all manually. You know, all of the stuff on it is manual,
Oh,
the
yeah.
exposure time, everything else. And then, you know, obviously that's captured in both color and black and white on the digital image. But then I only then pull it forward in black and white.
So getting the lighting has got to be key for you to make it work with what you want.
Absolutely, absolutely. Particularly on most of the images, you know, when I study them, I see a certain pattern and a pathway around the image where if you look at an image, you know, when I look at it and I'm trying to get that to the viewer, is there's a natural way of viewing those images. And we're all drawn to bright things. So the lighter the parts of the pathway, that generally outlines the way the eye moves on the image and is the pathway around the image.
So it's a different it's a same but different way of looking at composition, you know, because even when you look at doing like advertising in a magazine, right? It's like your eye goes here, it goes there. There's certain design elements we're all taught, but it's the same in photography, painting about composition, but color, you kind of go, well, there's a splash of color here, so that's fine. So for you, it's like you're looking at the lines of light.
Yes, that's exactly it. I mean, it's looking at the lines of light because you've stripped basically everything else out. And it sort of, you know, brings the focus point, the subject into real contrast because, you know, you're drawing down the very essence of it. You're not distracted by these other things.
So when you're doing these and then doing prints and everyone go to gbsmith.com, seriously, it's you'll be stuck on there for the whole day. And then you're getting it in a book. Is this going to be like a hard copy? Because I've got, you know, because we're doing this pre the publishing date again, November 7th. Are you doing this as a hard copy, like
Yeah,
a coffee
it's a
table?
hard print. There's a standard edition and then a limited edition. So we're only doing 500 of the limited edition, and that's in a
Oh, wow.
box. That's in a boxed set. So it's a 12 by 12 full format, 60 image, just black and white images, and it really is a selection of my more recent collections, images, anything, but you know, using that same technique and approach, but everything from, you know, nature images from New Zealand landscapes
Yeah.
through to, you know, modern architecture in New York.
I was thinking that, you know, going through it, that people were gonna would want it just out of like you're capturing this sense of place of time of, you know, you're capturing some history that people in the regions that you photograph, like you were saying in New Zealand and like, you know, the old dock in Maryland, I would want that. You know, you've done all these different places that those people are gonna want, hey, I want a piece of that. That's part of our history. You know, does that
Well,
happen with your photography?
yes, you know, it does. You know, and I get, you know, specialist prints of any of these images, and I donate all of that to the Breast Cancer Alliance,
Yeah.
and all of the proceeds from the book, from the author's proceeds, will go to Breast Cancer Alliance as well.
That's
So
amazing.
partnership we've had for a while.
That's really lovely that you're doing that. And because I think there's a sense and time and place to give back, you know, and for people doing things and businesses. I know you're also a CEO of a tech firm and been, you know, real busy with that too. But I feel like we have to get to that place in companies of what can we do to give back and not just keep doing for our company, you know?
No,
And
I
as
think
an
that's
artist, that's beautiful too, you know?
well, and there's an irony to the artist piece because, of course, a lot of people, back in the history of art, they were sponsored individuals by,
Right.
but by folks, and to be able to turn that around and use art to contribute to, other good, I think is a little irony to that, but I'm absolutely pleased to do that. But I think society generally, you talked about corporations and the rest of it. One really hopes they're getting much tighter mingling around, purpose and response. So, it's social responsibility. You think about the corporations 20, 30 years ago, very different sense of responsibility now. And I think that's, generally a very good thing.
Yeah, it's the change is good. The change we want positive stuff. And I think with your photography too, you know, it's like I was saying, it gives people a sense of place, but it is also opening people's minds. It's something like you could go back to and also celebrating the architects too, because how many people go and admire buildings? Or when I was thinking about looking at your book, going, how many people go by buildings? They're in the U Uber or whatever, and they get to, you know, New York City and don't see the whole building. And then it's like, it's this quick go by, or they'll have like a photograph that they'll see all so much in there that they're not seeing the beauty of this, what was built or created that somebody sweated over. Because an architect didn't build, like, there was that one crazy one, Dorothy's house. Is that what it was called? The crazy one? That's my favorite. And you know, no one just built that overnight, and never, no one just, you know, hey, here's a house idea, go for it and build it in a day.
It's to me, it's the reason that I do this, is multifaceted, but part of it is it's a very selfish thing for me because it makes me slow down. Listen, I spend most of my time in corporate life running around like everybody else, and I travel extensively and the rest of it. It's a forcing function to go just slow down for a bit and look around you and appreciate, be it great architecture, be it, a wonderful bridge, be it, a derelict pathway of some sort, be it great landscapes. Just take the time to go out there and stare at it and appreciate it. Because everything now is designed for quick, quick hit and move on. And, our lives are so fast paced. I think anything that helps you slow down a little bit and appreciate what's around us and see the real patterns and the work that, these architects went to and the thought. And it's not immediately apparent, of course, when you're zipping past in a taxi. It's just not,
Yeah. And it's, and the engineers, and they have to take that oath of trust
building.
or something. They all have those rings, the building, the engineers for bridges. We did an interview about that with Lee Brovedani, the trust architect. She was talking about that. Her husband's an engineer, and they have this like commitment that they make out of safety for these places. So I think that's a, it's a big deal to kind of reflect that when you're looking at these structures that you're actually honoring those people and the people that built them too, because that's a lot of work, the actual construction.
Yeah, it is. And the building that you talked about, Dorothy, is actually Frank Gehry, who's a pretty famous architect. That's one of his lesser known works, actually in Las Vegas.
Wow. Yeah. I mean,
It's in Vegas of all places.
wow. Well, Vegas has some crazy stuff in there too, but they keep imploding their buildings and they need to stop it and let us, like, you know, stop imploding. And that's why we need photographers. When you talk about stop and refocus, do you feel like when you're photographing, there's that moment in using tripods? That's, we always talk about the world of cell phone photography is a whole other weird world. It's not the same. I don't care what anybody tells me, it's not the same. Some parts are really good and some parts aren't. And the tripod is crucial. And I really suck at using tripods. I hate carrying them around and
Yeah,
whatever.
the clumsy.
But Well, I filmed a Civil War reenactment, and the tripod almost went down because of the cannons. But
Wow.
that, but I thought, like, if I didn't have it would never have happened, right? It would never have been filmed. But going out in those moments, you have, it is still, even though you're using a tripod, right? There's that breath of moment where you really don't have anything in your mind. Whereas I don't know about you, but I have that little crazy monkey mind that meditating is. Good luck with that. You better give me a glass of wine and some music. That's, it's
Right.
going to go ding, ding, ding. But in
Right.
photography, you're so fixed on that thing that isn't that in a way meditation, don't you think?
Oh, that's I absolutely precisely. And that to me is, one of the reasons that I do this. It forces me to do it because I'm focused on the image that I'm trying to capture. I'm enjoying the things around me. The tripod, by its very nature, forces you to be purposeful. Because you're not just wandering around doing this like you are. Listen, I think the democratization, if that's what you want to call it, of photography with iPhones is great. But again, it encourages just this quickness and skimming over the surface of everything instead of really experiencing the place that you're in. And I'll use a story to illustrate this to you. I was in a remote part of New Zealand, and all of a sudden, a large coach pulls up, and we're really in a remote part of New Zealand. The coach pulls up, all the tourists get out, they all get out with their Zoom sticks, and they all take the photograph. They were back on the bus within 12 minutes.
No.
And they got back on the bus and moved off, and we are in the most just beautiful landscape you ever want to see. And I just thought, how sad. They're not experiencing it. You got to walk around it and let it flow over you and go to places that are not. Very often I'll go to touristy type photograph places, but I never take photographs there. I always wander off, and go down different passages and find something that's, interesting and different. And, it's not fun to me to be around, hundreds of people all taking the same, sunrise, sunset image. But I just thought that was just very sad. And just to illustrate your point. And
They have the selfie stick, and then, well, we do that. We travel through national parks across the country, and
yeah.
we've seen people that just they're missing a mom and baby deer right behind them because they're so busy selfieing themselves. It's like, okay, I get it. Have your photo. But you're really missing everything, and you're missing the intricacy of like one flower. And that's something too in the architecture and the photos you're taking. You have the patterns of some of the architecture really go with the patterns of nature. I don't think man has ever built anything that wasn't inspired by nature. And when you look at some of the designs in nature, it's pretty mind-boggling how it goes mathematically and so perfectly at times. If you notice that as a photographer too, you're just like, dude, how did that, like, how does all these spots happen on this
Absolutely.
spider, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, people ask me, well, why don't you just focus on one type of genre of photography or whatever? And I go, listen, to me,
That's boring.
it's boring. B, variety is good. And I like to spice it up with lots of different things, getting to stimulate. And, I enjoy the structure of a landscape. As much as I enjoy, structure of the building and any kind of building. So to me, it's not particularly different. I see the analogies when I think about the patterns, the structure, and condensing it down to the shapes and forms. I see similar things.
Is it also that are you attracted to photography because it's kind of getting you into different places and making you think outside your box, and does that help you in business?
Absolutely, absolutely, it does. I mean, to me, being able to get away from my day-to-day business occasionally is just great sort of therapy. But what I notice is, in the background, I'm processing things that I'm thinking about, and it helps to really do something very, very different, something very creative, and to get out of that environment is actually very, very healthy, and it I think it makes me better at what I do when I go back into that environment because you've had a break. This notion that we have to, do 24/7, 365 days of the year, on the whatever it is you do, is not a healthy one, I don't think. And I think you're better at it if you take breaks from that and do something, in the words of Monty Python, completely different.
Yes, and stop picking your nose. No, but anyway, sorry. No, don't. As soon as anyone says that, I go to the life of Brian. I can't help it. But no, but there's really a point in that, and I think creativity and seeing how somebody else has built something. And it's interesting when you go to, you're talking about the industrial, architecture. Like going to Erie, Pennsylvania was one of those places that just blew my mind because that was a lot of steel factory, and a lot of brick. And having lived in the Southwest and California, just brick wasn't a thing. And back, well, even where you are, brick is around. There's brick row houses and stuff. And we're like, what? There's brick. There was brick when we lived in England too. But it's like this texture. And I look at it and it's like you could see it blackened from just all the smoke and everything. And so this town had this industrial section, which was starting to have breweries in it, and they're trying to do things with it to keep that buildings to, don't lose that history. But the true history is there. And then around the corner is Presque Isle, which is one of the most beautiful state parks in the country. The most beautiful beaches, and you've gone out and photographed snow waves coming in and things like that, they have that. But it's kind of interesting going, it's like an eeriness of the old school company towns, that something is really big and then suddenly something came and took it out. The Pony Express was here, the telegraph took it out. And I think when you do these kind of photos and show like it's keeping history alive, but it's also reminding us of change is always there, just like in photography.
I couldn't agree more. That sort of whole Appalachian, areas as you go up through there and up into the north, which are very, industrialized and were all, coal towns or steel town, the whole thing was around it. I think, first of all, preserving some of I love some of that architecture, the old steel mills and the rest of it is there's something. And I think, as I said, that's back to my own, growing up around that environment. And I think, preserving that, but like life goes on and different things get generated and different, economics drive in and the rest of it. But, they are now being, revived in various forms.
But there's something about those old buildings that they were like tough, man. There's like, just even when you go to a brewery and they keep the old piping, you're just like, I just want to sit. It's like when you go to a Victorian bed and breakfast and they have the original tin ceiling, like the pattern. Like, do you not just kind of get hung up on that, like for a day? Like, I'm weird that way.
No, I have a similar thing. I'm just absolutely fascinated by these old brick, sort of Victorian
All
type
of it. It's like
era
all of it.
industry. No,
Yeah.
and listen, I know that it wasn't a great lifestyle for those folks that had to live there and the rest of it. I appreciate that, but I think, not remembering that and not capturing it in some shape or form doesn't seem right too. We've all moved to the digital era and, the world of the cloud, and I get that, but that world of, physical labor,
And
where
chemicals.
whole communities were, involved in all of that, is something we shouldn't forget too quickly.
And that's why I think it's so important. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I think your photography reminds us of change, yet it's nostalgic and change and looks to the future. And I think nature is always, you've got nature in there. Somehow, even with, the Dorothy House has got the swirl is like, oh yeah, you went, someone looked at fungus somewhere. And looked at something cool there, and so it someone had some swirly nature things happening to be able to create that. Frank Gehry, like you're saying, he had some nature influence in that. There's no way that wasn't influenced.
Listen, I mean, everything comes from nature and what we see around us, some shape or form. We might not, it might not be absolutely obvious to us, but every piece of architecture, every bridge, everything that's built there, is grounded in some way and form on its shape, is built from the materials of nature.
So where are you now in this photo? Where is this cave? That looks like the Bay of Fundy in a way, but
This
it's
is
not, is
actually
it?
in this is in the northern coast of New Zealand, actually.
Oh, okay. Well,
Yeah,
that you
it's
like New
northern coast of New
Zealand.
Zealand. Yeah, I love New Zealand. Absolutely, it's one of the most beautiful countries in the world. Fabulous, absolutely adore New Zealand, North and South Island. Everybody goes to the South Island, which is beautiful, but the North Island is also equally beautiful. Yeah,
Any
gorgeous.
tips for aspiring photographers getting out there for them learning and going, you know, can I even make it doing it this day and age where everybody's a photographer with a phone? We call it bingo winging, especially Nancy, she calls it because you get it. You get the bingo wing. We have to explain that to people
No, I get
normally.
it. I get it. But I think it depends what your motivations are. I mean, I think, listen, if you want to earn a great living out of it, it's a tough thing to earn a living out of, given all the democratization of it. But listen, that if you're and like me, I was just hopeless at drawing or painting or anything, and I tried desperately hard. My elder brother was brilliant at it, which didn't help. He could draw anything. He was just naturally gifted, and I was terrible. So when I finally found a way, when I first discovered photography when I was like 10, 12 years old, to me it was just a way of, and I didn't realize it, that expressing yourself in a way, because I couldn't draw properly or the rest of it. So for me, it was just a, it was a wonderful thing when I found it. That was my first, real great sort of a passion. But it really needs to be, or the development of your passion. You really got to want to go do that. But the thing I would say is everybody gets so preoccupied with getting the right image and getting the image and being very driven and the rest of it. And really, to me, when I think about capturing images, it's the opposite of that. I'm not really out hunting for that, magical, multiple photo. If I come back from one image on a trip where I've gone for a week, which is unusual to that long, I am very happy. If there's
Wow,
one image,
that's amazing. Well,
one
Ansel
image
Adams
that I
was
go on
like
and
that.
hunt. Sorry?
Ansel Adams was like that. He said it took thousands to get one.
Yeah. Now in the digital age, it's a little bit easier, right? Because you're
Yeah.
not, if it was poor
We've
Ansel
got a
out
delete
take each
button.
one and got them on his back, now you can take multiple shots. But the point is that very often, in terms of how I do my imagery, I'll sort of research and target an area if I'm there, and I'll go there. But most of the time, the image that I really come back with is something that was not planned. It was, I wandered off somewhere and found a bridge or something
Oh,
that,
so you don't hire guides? Do you ever hire guides to
I
take you where
do,
you want to
depending on
go?
where I am in the world. In some places, it's just smarter to go do that. But I find my own image, plate
Yeah.
image. I'll use them to help me, navigate the country or whatever. But most of the images I take are not in the normal tourist kind of
Yeah,
places.
I don't. You don't need to take the iconic. Here it is, the obligatory
There's
for.
enough
Yeah.
photographs of the Eiffel Tower, and there's some beautiful, stuff of it done, and one can be innovative around that too. But there's a lot of other things in the world that, is not there. So, my advice is enjoy it. It's part of the process. It's part of the journey. And if you come back, and I can come back having been out, in some places I'll get up at like 3 in the morning to try and get the right light. And I'll come back and I've got no images, nothing worked right, the mist came down, you couldn't see a thing or whatever. And I come back and I go, that was still a beautiful morning.
It's
It got me out there.
exciting.
It got
It's
me out
ex
there.
exactly, it's exciting. One thing I wanted to touch on is warmth in photography, especially in black and white, because it's still tones of there's a cold black, there's a blue black, there's a yellow. You know what I mean? There's a different tones.
Yeah.
You know, like the one that's there to me has some of the golden undertones of black, right? So there's a warmth to it. And a lot of your photography, even if it's the way the water's moving, there's a warmth. So there's a warmth in the composition of your photography and how it's out there. And a lot of times, the digital age, it's like a whole new art form to add the warmth in, just like in music. In music, when we were recording on tape and the old school of recording, and now it's this crystal over crystal clear. We took vinyl away, and now it's coming back. Thank God. Photography, I feel, is that way too. When we were filming on film, and I think the digital age is great. I'm not knocking it, but there was this warmth through film and that process that now has to be like it is. Isn't the post processing like you take the photo and then you come into the studio with it and start editing? Isn't that like a bigger art form now than what it was?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I'm a traditionalist. I don't shoot in film, but when I process, interestingly, digitally, you can reproduce that film warmth. You can quite literally say now within, like various Photoshop type applications, I want, an Ilford 400 ASA type this film, and it will replicate it. And so in some ways, I use all the digital stuff. And of course, in my day job, listen, I've spent my last sort of 40 years, helping build, the cloud infrastructure, basically. So, I spend my day in the digital world. But, I use post-processing actually in some ways to go back to the film piece. So I, the first thing I do when I do the pro first of all, I do very light touch in post process, and I try and capture a lot of what I got on, first time in the camera. But what I do is the first thing I do is pull it back to, film type. And that I think gives it the, the warmth that I'm used to and the range from the black and the white that I'm used to. And I take a lot of time around the processing. It can take me, a couple of days, even on one image, but I actually don't do a whole lot to it. It's very small things that I will touch and just make sure that, it's
It's
cleaned up,
tweaked, where it needs to be.
bleached and cleaned up,
Well, because I see photography with, I saw someone do food photography, and I'm interested on the black and white side because there is color, and I mean, black is a composite of everybody, right? And so when you look at the photography, they were adding in smoke. And so, like, to me, the background you have has that natural nature that, there is a blue gray. I get it. It's kind of rare in nature to see real blue gray. It's like a, you know what I don't know how it works on color blindness of that kind of sight of coloring, but he takes and he puts fake smoke on somebody's steak. I just, this is a, he's a self-proclaimed food photographer, and it's the wrong color. Like, that's the wrong smoke color. Smoke doesn't have that. And it's like, did you just light a match? That's not what the food, that's not what steam and smoke comes off of a grill. And it's completely unnatural. So I love all this technology, but some of it, I'm just like, why don't you just go photograph the steak on the grill? Just go do it. Just go do exactly, slow your camera down, man.
Well, I think unfortunately, with the advent of AI and the rest of it, just being creep in, I mean, this is going to be more the case. And I think there's, and it's a great debate in the photography world, how much is post-process versus, is it really now, the photograph that you took, or is it something completely fabricated, for want of a better word? And that's the great debate. And, listen, I'm a bit more of a traditionalist in it in terms of the approach, but I think it's okay to, clean up an image and, get rid of a bollard that shouldn't be there, that's distracting, or, that kind of stuff. But if you basically create something that wasn't there, a complete, that sort of steps over the line to me of,
Doesn't that, I mean,
it's
to me, because
creative,
then
but it's not a
it's
photo.
not what the chef did, and you're trying to represent the chef. It's like the goal. Like, to me, the fact that you, honestly, if you take a good photograph at the beginning, it saves you a whole bunch of time.
Yeah,
And you're
no,
having more fun in the field. Wouldn't you? That's more fun than at the computer.
that's exactly right. I mean, I don't have the time spent, even though I spend a lot of time on a single image, it takes me a long time to choose that image that I'm the one that I'm really going to go do. But I'd rather be out there in the field, having fun and enjoying the world.
Yeah.
And back to your question about advice. Listen, it's a beautiful thing. It gets you out there. You enjoy places. It's a forcing function to slow down. It's a forcing function to get you to places that you perhaps wouldn't, necessarily go to. And that's a good thing.
Oh, I
It's got
love
to
it.
be a good thing.
It's fun. It's fun. Now I've got to learn how to photograph fungus now in the Appalachian Mountains. It's a whole other world. You can't bingo wing it either. Just saying, you can't, because you have to get under and get the gills. If you want the gills, you got to go down. I still, that photo, you have a photo of yourself on the website, gbsmitheveryone.com, getting that ice, the waves of ice. How do you do that when it's so darn cold? I mean, you can't shake too much, and my camera tells me where to go if I don't keep it warm on things like that. So doing all that work, you get out there. That's impressive.
It gets you into stuff that you wouldn't necessarily do. I wouldn't be, having big rubber boots on wading into
That's
ice
so much fun.
cold stuff in
So fun.
Iceland unless, it was there. But, it gets you into places that you wouldn't go to and experience other things. And, to me, life's about getting out there. The world's a big place with, fabulous things to go see. And
Exactly.
I've always sort of traveled, and I'm fortunate to be able to do that, and I think it's a great thing.
Absolutely. And I think what's beautiful about what you're doing with the book, obviously, the proceeds going to the Breast Care Alliance, that's a beautiful thing too. Breast Cancer Alliance, excuse me. But for sometimes it's an inspiration for people to get out there, even if it's their backyard. It's an inspiration to look at things and observation of what photography does. Even if you're taking your phone, hang out over that idea of the image for a little while, and your phone has fabulous things, tools. The tools on phones today are pretty darn incredible. And I'm like, okay, maybe this can do more than some cameras, So play with it and have fun. But I also think you're taking people to places that they're never going to see. And that's a beauty of photography and the arts, that it can travel and be timeless. You can take something that can crumble. Some of those docks may not even be there anymore, not in those positions. And there was one, I'm like, I ain't walking on that. So I think you're really holding some history and showing people places they've never been in a beautiful way, and keeping their imagination like, ooh, I wonder, let me go look this place up. I started getting into that. I'm like, oh, I want to go there. I haven't been there. I'm going to look this up, So, very cool, and a pleasure to have you on the show. It's been a real treat.
Lisa, I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank
Hey,
you. Great.
everyone, again, the book again by G.B. Smith is out on November 7th, 2023. You can go to gbsmith.com, and again, it is called Pathways. And when you look through it, you'll understand why it's called Pathways. Pretty much like what we've talked about today. You can keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lisa.